Chapter 6.
After Paul, Tony, Becca, and Valerie had all left to crash, the other four women and I headed out to the back parking lot, locked up Cincy's jewel, and then hopped into Janine's Grand Prix. The paranormal archaeologist drove us back to Ada's club, as we all struggled to stay awake, and once we got to the establishment, we promptly headed upstairs and jumped into our big, silk-covered, king-sized bed. Even though I had an extended nap earlier in the night, I was still pretty exhausted from everything we'd done in the previous day. So I passed out the moment I felt the warmth of my four lovers against my body. We all woke up a few hours later, jumped into the shower, and prepared for the day ahead. Then, as the five of us sat around the main lounge area of the upstairs and munched on our breakfasts, we tried to figure out our next steps.
Do you think Hanson will even let us in?
I asked, as I took a bite out of a crisp, juicy apple. Or do you think he's only going to trust Janine?
He'll let you in,
Janine said through a mouthful of oatmeal.
If not out of respect or a desire to help, then at least out of fear. After our last encounter, I don't believe he would dare try to tell a werepanther what to do.
You should come along too, Naomi, I said as I glanced over to the witch. If Hanson gives us any juicy details about the spells these cults use or anything like that, I want someone there who can actually understand what he's talking about.
I'm coming along as well, if you don't mind,
Leah interjected before she finished off the bit of oatmeal in her bowl.
I've known Mr. Bartram for years, and I want to know anything and everything he might have been hiding from us for all this time.
Ada? I chuckled as I tossed the eaten core of the fruit into a nearby waste bin. Will you be joining us as well? You're the only one who's not coming along so far.
Sorry, loves.
Ada sighed dramatically.
I have far too much business to take care of here. Also, I've got a few meetings to attend with those realtors I told you about.
You found potential expansion locations? I asked as my eyes widened with glee. This quickly?
There are plenty of buildings to choose from in this city, Carter.
The succubus shrugged.
If you're willing to go for the fixer-uppers. I don't like the sound of that.
Naomi snorted.
You're making it sound like you're going to open a second Cincy's Jewel in an old abandoned factory or something. The old factory down by the Ohio is one of the possible locations.
Ada confirmed.
Though they also wish to show me a property that is an old church as well as a former office building closer to the downtown area.
You're serious?
Naomi frowned.
Dead serious, love.
Ada nodded.
Unlike so many other businesses around here, we have enough capital to completely build a new location from the ground up. Unfortunately, there aren't too many pieces of empty land within the distance of our target demographic, so we have to get a bit creative with our expansion.
That's not a bad idea, honestly,
Leah said.
I hear people talking about the whole reclamation businesses thing on campus all the time.
Val claimed it would be a PR dream.
Ada added.
If we take something old and decrepit and turn it into something fresh and new, we'd be the talk of the town. Well, more than we already are, of course.
And if that second location proves successful, we can start thinking about out-of-state expansions, I said with a grin.
Yes, Valerie was showing me all the untapped markets that would go crazy for a place like this,
the succubus said, and her green eyes glittered with glee.
Indianapolis, Columbus, Cleveland, Louisville, and those are just other cities within driving distance. Your empire could be huge, Carter.
I was already happy with the fact that my empire was expanding, but the thought of moving out of Cincinnati and making Cincy's Jewel a regional brand? Whew, that thought put me over the moon. Then there was the fact that if everything worked out, we could even expand across the whole U.S. to the bigger cities like L.A. or New York or Dallas. Of course, it couldn't really be called Cincy's Jewel if it wasn't located in Cincinnati, but that was a bridge we could cross when we got to it. For now, I needed to grow my power here in the city, both as a paranormal creature and as a businessman. That's a completely valid reason for not joining us. I can't wait to see what you find out.
I'll give you the rundown when I return,
Ada explained and flashed me a wink.
I'll be sure to take plenty of notes. In all honesty, though, I don't think I'd want to go see Hanson either way. That thing is more Janine's speed, but it bores me to tears.
His office isn't very large, anyways. Plus, if we just show up with our entire crew, he's likely to get nervous and think we're about to shake him down.
Go and learn more about these little boys' clubs,
Ada smirked.
I'm sure you'll find them both to be somewhat enthralling.
We finished up our breakfasts, and then Naomi, Janine, Leah, and I all went downstairs and walked out to the Grand Prix in the parking lot. Janine had to push the unlock button several times before the damn thing would even open, which caused me to formulate an idea. Janine twisted the key, brought the engine to life, and then pulled out onto the main road. But as we drew closer to the University of Cincinnati's campus, I put my plan into action. Janine, pull off on this exit here.
Why?
The redhead asked with a raised eyebrow.
UC isn't for 3 more exits.
Just do it, I said with a smirk. I promise it'll be worth your while. Janine looked confused for a moment, but then she turned the wheel and pulled the car over to the nearest exit. I guided her around for a few more turns and roundabouts until, finally, I saw the sign of the place I was taking her. It was a giant red and black sign that towered over everything else around it, and it read, Luxury Auto of Cincy, in big block letters.
Carter?
Janine trailed off as her brown eyes widened behind her glasses.
Where are you taking us?
To replace this thing, I grinned. And to maybe do a little bit of upgrading myself while I'm at it.
I can't let you do that!
The redhead sputtered as her mouth fell agape.
You don't need to buy me a car! This one is still working just fine. That's debatable!
Leah chuckled from the back seat.
Still!
Janine huffed.
It's not a big deal. This Grand Prix has gotten me through a lot since I bought it in high school, and it'll keep going until the wheels fall off.
You don't have to get rid of it. I know this car has a lot of good memories attached to it, so you can keep it if you want to. But you deserve an upgrade, Janine. You've worked really damn hard these last few years trying to finish up your degree, and I know you've been neglecting yourself in the process. If you're not going to treat yourself every now and again, then I will. It's the least I can do.
Carter, I don't know what to say.
Janine's chocolate brown eyes filled with tears.
This is too much.
It's honestly not enough, I said with a smile. Now pull in here and we can figure out what you want.
This is a luxury lot,
Janine gasped as she pulled into the dealership.
These are way out of my price range.
Lucky for you, they're right in mine, I winked. I mean, most of these are used anyways, so I'm sorry I can't go out and buy you a brand new Bugatti or something. Maybe once we get a few expansion locations opened.
Damn.
Naomi whistled.
Maybe I should go back to school and study my ass off to get a new car.
Ah, you'll be next, I promised the two women in the back seat. Next quarter, if Cincy's Jewel makes enough profit, whew, then I'll bring both of you back here and let you do the same thing.
Oh my gosh!
Leah gasped.
I haven't even owned a new car in my life. They've all been hand-me-downs.
Then it'll really be a special treat, I said as I winked at the blonde over my shoulder. Janine pulled to a stop, and then all four of us hopped out of the vehicle and began to search. Of course, a salesman was right on us the second we emerged, so we had to try and play it cool to keep him from overselling us on anything. We searched the lot for nearly an hour before, finally, Janine froze in her tracks, let out a squeal, and then darted over to a nearby red Ferrari Spider, complete with the convertible top. Janine bounced up and down in front of the vehicle like an excited toddler, and the salesman's face twisted into a wide grin. I was sure he knew that look all too well. He knew we weren't leaving this lot without that vehicle.
This has always been my dream car, Carter.
Janine breathed as we all walked up.
Always a dream car, though, since I figured I wouldn't ever make enough as an archaeologist to afford one.
Well, then today is your lucky day, I said as I threw my hands out and turned to the salesman. We'll take it.
But, sir.
The man blinked and cleared his throat.
I haven't even gone over the features yet, or the price. It's a 2019.
I don't care about any of that. I waved him off. I'm going to pay for it all today, after I find something for myself, too. The salesman's eyes widened, though his smile was now ear to ear. He knew just how much commission he was going to make off me, so he simply made a zipping lips motion with his hand and then took a step back.
You mean it, Carter?
Janine asked, as she looked up at me and bit her lip.
I know this is pricey.
I stepped over to the beautiful redhead, slipped my arm behind her waist, and pulled her in close to me. Then I gave her a soft peck on the lips before I ran my hands through her hair and stared down into her beautiful brown eyes. Anything for you, Janine, I whispered. I'd give you the whole world if you wanted it. A slight blush crept onto the redhead's cheeks as she let out a little giggle.
Are you going to get a matching car?
Janine continued.
I think you'd look sexy in a Ferrari.
I'm not a big Ferrari guy, I admitted as I looked over to the salesman.
Where are your Lambos? Oh, right this way, Mr. Hatfield, the salesman declared, and then he motioned for us to follow him.
We walked over to the section of the lot that housed its Lamborghinis, which were plentiful. I saw models dating all the way back to the classics of the 90s to the most current and new.
The lot had Lambos in all different colors, and the rainbow sea of luxury sports cars made me grin like a kid in a candy store. However, the one that caught my attention was a beautiful little green number, with a sleek body and doors that opened upward to the sky. "How much for this one?" I questioned as I walked over and glanced inside.
"After taxes and fees, this Aventador will cost $518,000.
The interior had the same green trim all around its leather seats, complete with shiny black metal that glistened under the morning sun. A large color display sat in the very center of the console, and the Lamborghini logo stood proudly at the center of the steering wheel. The vehicle was only a two-seater, but that was fine with me. It was built for speed first and foremost, and I wanted to keep it that way.
"Sold!"
I declared after I'd looked around a bit. "Why don't you put those two totals together and we can draw out the paperwork?"
Yes, sir!
The salesman smiled.
"Right away!"
"Becca's definitely not going to be happy about this!"
Leah chuckled as the man in the gray suit waddled away, and we began to follow.
"This is a major unplanned expense."
"Eh, not really," I shrugged. "I'm buying it out of my own personal account, not the one for my business."
"You can afford to drop that much?"
The blonde woman gasped. "Right now I can. I mean, it's still a major hit on my finances, but it's not going to bankrupt me or anything."
"Wow,"
Leah whispered.
"I guess Cincy's jewel really is doing as well as we think it is."
"It's doing better," I grinned. "And I couldn't do it without all of you guys and all the help you've given me."
"Stop it, Carter,"
Naomi smirked.
"You're going to make me blush."
"It's true, though. I don't know where I'd be without all of you."
"Probably still studying history at UC."
Janine giggled.
"And pining after that studious redhead without actually talking to her."
We followed the salesman into the dealership, where he proceeded to draw up the paperwork for the two vehicles. We went over all the dumb, boring, legalese shit they were required to talk about. And then I finally called up my bank and authorized the wire transfer directly to the dealership. The grand total came out to just over $1 million, which was something I could never have done before all the success of the jewel. Then again, this was the new me. And the new me was way better off than the old version, so I could afford to spoil myself and my women a little bit. Finally, after a bit of paperwork signing and the like, the dealer pulled our two new vehicles around and handed us the keys.
"Enjoy, Mr. Hatfield and Miss Beckett," the salesman said as he handed us the fobs. "You deserve them."
"So..."
Janine chuckled as she walked up to her new Ferrari.
"This puts us in a bit of an awkward situation in terms of vehicles." "I'll drive your old car,"
Leah offered.
"I kind of like the way it handles."
"I'm riding with Carter,"
Naomi said with a grin.
"No offense, Janine, but I'm more of a Lambo girl, too."
"I don't care."
Janine shook her head and did an excited little shimmy.
"I have a fucking Ferrari now. This is so awesome. Thank you, Carter. You're the best boyfriend a woman could ever ask for."
Janine gave me a giant bear hug before she let out a long, gleeful squeal and ran over to the driver's side of her vehicle. The bright red door swung upward and she slid behind the wheel before she stuck the key into its slot and cranked it hard. The engine of the Ferrari sprang to life with a deafening roar, and Janine's face was nothing but smiles as she closed the door and rolled down the passenger window.
"We'll meet you on campus," I promised.
"Make sure you don't get too crazy with your speed, though. We don't need any tickets."
Have I mentioned I love you, Carter?"
Janine sighed longingly. "Once or twice," I winked. "See you there."
"I'll go get my badass vehicle,"
Leah said in a playful, sarcastic tone.
"See you guys soon."
As Leah headed back toward the Grand Prix, I walked to the passenger side of my new Lambo and popped open the door.
"After you, m'lady," I said with a slight bow to my witchy companion.
"Ugh."
Naomi wrinkled her nose.
"Did you really have to bust out m'lady?"
"I sure did, mainly because I wanted you to cringe."
"Mission accomplished,"
Naomi smirked before I helped her into the seat and closed the door. Then I came around to the other side, opened the door, and jumped into the driver's seat. The fabric of the interior was so soft that I felt like I was sitting right on a cloud, and I let out a happy sigh as I caressed the sleek material of the steering wheel in my hands. My fingers sat lightly on the manual paddle shifters perfectly, and I couldn't help but stare happily at the futuristic-looking dashboard as I took it all in. This was mine. I was the proud new owner of a frickin' Lambo. "Let's see how this baby purrs," I grinned, as I stuck the key into the ignition. I turned it, and suddenly the engine of the green vehicle came to life with a sound like a jet engine. I couldn't wait to hear the roar of this thing as I sped down the highway, with the windows down and one of my beautiful lovers in the passenger seat. I waved goodbye to the salesman before I pulled out of the lot and headed back for the highway. The engine was surprisingly quiet as I traveled down the road at a regular speed, though much to the annoyance of Naomi.
I thought these things were supposed to be fast.
The witch asked with a sly smirk. Just you wait. Once we get a bit of a straight road ahead of us, I'm gonna cut loose. We came to the exit we'd originally turned off, and I quickly pulled us back onto the main highway. Then I let the Aventador do its thing. I pressed down on the gas pedal and the air around us was filled with a noise like a fucking jet ski as the car took off like a bat out of hell. We went from 40 to 90 in seconds, and Naomi cackled with excitement as I whipped in and out of traffic. Eventually, we caught up to Janine in her new car, and I laughed when I saw the redhead's smug grin as she rocketed down the road. We were neck and neck along the road until, finally, we saw the exit that would lead us to our destination, and we pulled off the highway. Janine and I found our parking spots in the visitor lot, close to where the main building was, and where I knew nobody would try to fuck with our vehicles. Once we parked, I sent Leah a text to let her know we were here, and that she should meet us over by Hansen's office. Even though it was still cold as fuck outside, the campus of the University of Cincinnati was as busy as ever. Students bundled up in their puffy jackets rushed to and fro as their backpacks bounced with each step they took. And there were even two guys running around on one of the lawns in nothing but shorts. And I laughed at how Midwestern the whole scene appeared. Once we were about halfway across campus, I spotted the familiar face of Leah as she sat on a bench with one leg crossed over the other.
Took you long enough?
The polywarm woman chuckled as she stood up to greet us.
I thought your new cars were supposed to be faster than an old Grand Prix. We were,
Janine said with a playful smirk.
But we had to park way further away and then walk to this side of campus, so it all evened out.
Sure.
Leah winked as she joined our group. We continued onward until we arrived at the oldest building on campus, where the university had tucked away Dr. Hansen's office in the basement. The four of us entered through the back door before we proceeded down the creaky stairs stained with black mold, and the stairwell simply reeked of mildew. Once we exited into the hallway of the basement, I saw the signs of our last visit were still present and accounted for. Parts of the ceiling had been torn out, and there were several claw marks and dark scorch marks everywhere. They really don't give a shit about this building, do they? I laughed as we walked on.
That's why the Paranormal Archaeology Department is down here,
Janine sighed.
The administration doesn't give two werepanther shits about us, so they just tossed us in this old decrepit building and hoped we wouldn't bother anyone.
Eventually, we came to the door of Dr. Hansen's office, so I rapped upon it as gently as I could. I didn't want to hit it too hard, or I was afraid the whole thing would fall off its hinges. A moment later, my ears picked up the sound of rustling papers from the other side, followed by hurried footsteps. Then the door clicked open, and we were all met with the short, balding man with glasses that acted as Janine's mentor. Hansen's beady eyes widened behind his glasses when he saw us, and his pudgy cheeks flushed red as he opened his mouth and sputtered.
What are you doing here?
He gulped, and I could hear the sound of his heart as it threatened to jump out of his chest. We're just here to get some information, I said, and I raised my hands to look non-threatening.
Is the old man here?
Hansen asked as he looked around the hallway. No, Paul stayed behind.
Hello, Dr. Hansen,
Janine said in a bubbly tone.
May we come in? We've got some very important questions we'd like to ask you.
Of course, my dear.
Hansen nodded, and then he stepped away from the door and held it open, but fixed me with a long, hard look.
Just as long as Mr. Hatfield here promises not to transform.
I won't, I said as I cocked an eyebrow at him. As long as you don't give me a reason to, of course. The man's face fell as his heart rate increased tenfold, and I started to worry I was going to scare the poor guy into having a heart attack. Sweat was beaded on his forehead as he gestured for me to come in. But he tried to play it cool the entire time. Even though it was hidden away from the world, Hansen's office was always a sight to behold. The dude had literal walls full of books, as well as a giant skeleton replica and images of several different paranormal creatures hung up everywhere. It looked like something ripped straight out of the Addams Family, which was quite fitting considering his field of study.
To what do I owe the pleasure, Mr. Hatfield?
Hansen asked as he walked over behind his desk and then plopped down in his Victorian-era chair.
Are you having issues with Kanzu and the OLG again?
Actually, not this time. We've recently discovered the existence of two different occult organizations, and we're trying to figure out which one to trust.
In my experience, the answer would be neither.
Hansen sighed and pushed his glasses up the bridge of his button nose.
But go on.
One is the Ancient Order of the Nile,
Janine explained.
Ada seemed to know about them, though she said she didn't really have many dealings with the organization.
You hide from the Ancient Order of the Nile.
The professor raised an eyebrow.
Oh, that is a rarity.
More than heard from them,
Naomi interjected.
They tried to kill us.
The AON tried to kill you. I find that very hard to believe. This is the same organization that refused to fight in the Great Holy War of 1700-542, even though every other worshipper of Kek took up his call to arms.
So, they're nonviolent, then?
Janine asked.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. They still perform human sacrifices and the like, but they tend to remain neutral on all fronts. They are quite the narcissistic bunch, so they don't get involved in anyone else's affairs unless they truly have to. Are you sure it was them who tried to kill you?
100%, I said with a nod. Their leaders even sent me a letter afterwards to apologize and everything.
And you were attacked unprovoked?
We were literally just driving home from the Historical Society.
Huh. How peculiar,
Hansen said as he stroked his chin.
I don't think it's that strange,
Naomi scoffed.
Kek is working with Khonsu now, and Khonsu hates Carter, so the followers of Kek tried to kill us.
The only way they would do such a thing would be if they had received a direct order from Kek himself. And even then, I don't believe they would throw themselves headfirst into a confrontation with the most powerful paranormal entity in centuries.
The organization seems pretty divided about it, hence the apology note.
They want Carter to come to their confluence of the mind in Chicago,
Janine added. Hansen's beady little eyes narrowed as he mulled over our words, and then he plopped back in his chair and crossed his fingers over his chest.
This whole scenario is fascinating. The confluence of the mind is one of the AON's most sacred events. They never allow outsiders in, period. Trust me, I know. I have tried many times over the years. Even when I attempted to go in undercover, those men were able to sniff me out like bloodhounds.
So then it's definitely a trap,
Naomi mumbled.
No way they would invite their god's mortal enemy to their most sacred event.
Oh, on the contrary, Naomi. The Ancient Order of the Nile is full of very smart men. Did they give you an address to go along with the invitation?
They did.
Wow. I am jealous, Mr. Hatfield. That is about as legitimate of an invitation as you could possibly receive. The AON would never divulge their location to an enemy, even if they felt they could kill him. I believe they truly wish to apologize to you and bury the hatchet by inviting you to their most sacred of ceremonies, the largest gathering of their group in the world.
I still don't see how this isn't a trap, I shrugged. It has all the markings of one.
Look, Mr. Hatfield.
Hansen shook his head and chuckled.
I cannot possibly understand what goes through the mind of an AON member. I do not believe that even the most highly trained psychologists would be able to understand their thought process. But what I do know, though, is they are very strict when it comes to the confluence of the mind.
What is the confluence, Dr. Hansen?
Janine asked, with a sheepish expression.
I'm afraid I'm not very familiar with the concept.
Nor am I, my dear.
Hansen let out a belly laugh.
Hence why I've tried to get in for all these years. All I know is it is held in a different location every year, and members of the AON from all around the world attend it. What happens once the confluence begins, though, is a mystery I have yet to solve.
I honestly didn't know what to make of this whole situation. It sounded like the AON were sincere in wanting to apologize to me, but I wasn't exactly about to travel across the country just so we could run into a giant gathering of people who worshipped Kek, the deity that wanted me dead and was responsible for turning Val into a were-turtle. Then again, if they weren't trying to lure me into a trap, I could easily work a bit of my were-panther charm and see if I could make friends with the AON, which would then give me an inside track into Kek's actions.
What do you think we should do, Dr. Hansen?
Janine asked her mentor.
Honestly, I would wait. If they are truly serious about this offer, they will contact you again before Saturday. And if they contact you multiple times, well, then there might be cause for alarm. If they're desperate to get you and your friends to the confluence, it might be a tad concerning.
I'll sit on that one, then.
And hope they don't attack again in the meantime,
Naomi added.
What about the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus?
Leah spoke up. The blonde, polywarm woman had been fairly quiet during this entire conversation, and for half a second, I'd forgotten she was even there.
My word!
Hansen laughed as a smile twisted up his chubby face.
They are the polar opposite of the AON. What on earth do you need to know about them for?
The father of one of my best friends is a part of it,
Leah continued.
At least, we think he is.
I see.
The professor nodded.
And this is a cause for concern?
We don't know. We're always looking for allies, and I know the Brotherhood worships Nefertem, who is the son of Bast.
That is a gross oversimplification of their relationship, though you are essentially correct.
Ada didn't know much about the Brotherhood, so we figured we'd come to you and pick your brain to see if they would be a good option for us to explore in terms of alliances.
I want to know if their members are safe to be around.
Leah interjected with a frown.
If he's doing sketchy shit that puts Becca at risk, I want to help her get the fuck away from him as soon as possible.
The professor stroked his chin and then wiped a bit of sweat from his brow with the back of his hand.
Are any of you familiar with the game Dungeons and Dragons?
I've played a few times. What about it?
Well, the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus is essentially a cult full of druids. As the name suggests, they are obsessed with everything to do with nature, which stems from Nefertem himself. Unlike the AON, the Brotherhood is fairly nonviolent, and they only seem to fight if they believe their own lives are being threatened. They actually did away with the notion of live sacrifices centuries ago, and now they only sacrifice plants to their god.
So they could be useful to our fight, I nodded.
Unless they refuse to fight,
Naomi pointed out as she crossed her arms over her busty chest.
They sound like monks or something.
No way.
Leah scoffed.
Mr. Bartram is the furthest thing from a monk I've ever seen. He was loud and talkative and super social. He also had a fuck ton of plants, which makes a lot more sense now.
It sounds like meeting Becca's dad is the right call then. Though I'm not too sure he'll be happy with the cold call we're doing.
Just be careful, Mr. Hatfield.
Hansen said as his tone grew dire.
When it comes to the world of the paranormal, not all is what it seems. You already know that, but you should stay on your toes at all times. I believe I've given you the correct advice, though it is hard to predict what such strange men will do, especially when faced with the sight of a werepanther.
What about spells?
Naomi asked.
Are there certain spells these groups tend to use?
A wonderful question!
The professor nodded.
Naturally, being somewhat druidic, the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus tends to use spells associated with nature. They can control plants, sense vibrations in the earth, and cause brief changes in the wind.
Thaumaturgy. It sounds like they know a bunch of cantrips.
What's a cantrip?
Naomi asked with a raised eyebrow. It's a...
You know what? I'll explain later. Basically, they're weak but useful spells. As for the AON, they are hard to get a grasp on. I know many of their spells utilize liquids, though I've heard rumors they can also communicate with reptiles and amphibians as if they were human beings.
When we tried to interrogate some of our attackers, they were drowned by black liquid.
That would line up with the ancient Order of the Nile's magic.
The squat man nodded.
What about weaknesses?
Naomi pressed further.
Do you have any idea what these people are weak against?
Not a clue, my dear.
Hansen shook his head.
I have never in my life come to blows with the Brotherhood of the Blue Lotus, so I simply don't know much about their fighting style or magical abilities. As for the AON, well, if they have a weakness, they do an excellent job of hiding it.
Thank you for the help, Dr. Hansen. I smiled at the man as I extended my hand. Hansen seemed cautious as he stood from his chair and looked down at my open palm, but after a few seconds of staring, the professor reached up and gave it a firm shake. Then he smiled as his beady eyes met my own.
Anytime, Mr. Hatfield,
the professor said in a tone that was cordial, though less than enthusiastic.
I hope my knowledge brings you one step closer to ending this horrific occult nonsense here in Cincy.
Little did Hansen know that I wasn't just aiming to wipe out all enemy cults in the city. Oh, no. I was planning on taking them out at the very top and eliminating the problem from the whole world. Until next time, Doctor, I said as I approached the door and then held it open for my friends.
Goodbye, Professor!
Janine smiled broadly as she waved and then headed for the exit.
Oh, Miss Beckett!
Hansen raised his finger as we were about to leave.
Don't forget, you still have the second draft of your thesis statement due this Friday. I know you are currently caught up in more important matters, but I want you to stay on track for graduation.
Sure thing, Doc.
Janine chuckled, and then she stepped out into the hallway.
He's a real ball buster, isn't he?
Naomi whispered to the redhead.
You think he's bad?
Leah scoffed.
You should meet Dr. Feinstein. She's like a drill sergeant in the bio lab.
At least he's willing to help us, I said as we began to walk down the hall. Paul must not have frightened him too much.
I'm just relieved Becca's father isn't a psychopath.
Leah sighed.
I was worried about him there for a few hours. Dr. Hansen technically never said that.
Janine said with a slight inflection on the word technically.
He only said that members of the Brotherhood are fairly peaceful. Becca's dad could still be full-on loony, even if he's harmless. That's the key word I was looking for, though.
The polywarm woman said.
Harmless. As long as he's not a threat to Becca's safety, I don't care what he does in his spare time.
We exited the building and began to head back across campus to find our vehicles, but as we walked, something started to feel off. The campus that had been bustling and alive not an hour ago was now completely empty and devoid of any signs of life. Even the sounds of the rustling tree branches and the tweeting birds seemed to have ceased, and it seemed like the temperature had dropped 10 degrees in the meantime.
Was it supposed to get this cold today?
Naomi asked, as she tried to cover herself with her own arms.
Ugh, what the fuck?
That's when I felt the chill run down my spine. The invisible eye. Danger was nearby.
Stay alert!
I hissed in a whisper. There's something coming for us! My friends all went silent as they gathered around me, and then we continued to walk together in a protective circle. But as we passed a small park area with a few trees, some bushes, and a water fountain, I heard the trees begin to shake.
There!
Leah growled as she pointed to a nearby oak. That's when a lanky, tall figure dropped down from one of the branches and landed in a frog-like crouch on all fours. He was so thin that I could probably wrap my hands around his waist, and his body was covered completely in moss-green scales. A few white markings wrapped around his wrists, ankles, and waist, and the creature's face had bulbous yellow eyes without pupils that appeared to be half the size of his skull. He had no nose, but there were two slits in the center of his face, and the monster's snout was round and protruded like a salamander's. Upon his head was long, sopping, wet black hair, and the locks hung down against his body in several limp clumps.
"Who the fuck are you?"
I demanded, but the creature didn't say a word. Instead, he simply tilted his head 180 degrees to the right, and it turned upon his neck like a barn owl.
"What the fuck?"
"Carter,"
Janine breathed, and I glanced over to see her face was pale and ashen.
That's him.
"Who? Who or what is that thing?"
"It's Keck, Carter. In the flesh."